that's pretty close on time. Thing is, this is Henry Thompson's big game. I don't think he's playing at all. This is all show. Loves it. Glamour people. Loves it. Glamour too. I see that insecure little backwards Jewish professor, ugly. Not ugly, but not bad. It's not innocent. And he ignored it.
Spring about 3 weeks, we've been reading and hearing about the massive invasion of South Vietnam by the communist armies of North Vietnam. Tonight I want to give you a first-hand report on the military situation in Vietnam, the decisions I have made with regard to the role of the United States forces in the conflict, and the efforts we are making to bring peace and negotiation to them. Let me begin by reviewing what the situation was when I took office and what we have done since then to end American involvement in the war, to bring peace to the long-suffering people of Southeast Asia. On January 20, 1969, the American troops in Vietnam was 549,000. Our casualties were running as high as 300 a week. 30,000 young Americans were being drafted every month. Today, 39 months later, through our program of de-ethnization, helping the South Vietnamese develop the capability of defending themselves, the number of Americans in Vietnam by Monday, May 1st, will have been reduced to 69,000. Our casualties seen during the present all-out enemy offensive have been reduced by 95%. Draft calls now average fewer than 5,000 men a month. We expect to bring them to zero next year. As I reported in my television address to the nation on January 25, we have offered the most generous peace terms in both public and private negotiating sessions. Our most recent proposals provided for an immediate ceasefire, the exchange of all prisoners of war, the withdrawal of all of our forces and new elections for Vietnam, which would be internationally supervised, with all political elements, including the communists, participating in and helping to run the elections. one month before such elections, President Hugh and Vice President Wong would resign. NR's contemptuous answer to this only was a refusal even to discuss our proposals, and at the same time, a massive escalation of their military activities on the battlefield. Last October, the same month when he made this peace offer to Hanoi and Tiku, our intelligence reports began to indicate that the enemy was building up for a major attack. Yet we deliberately refrained from responding militarily. Instead, we patiently continued to prepare storms because we wanted to give the enemy every chance to reach a negotiated settlement at the bargaining table rather than to seek a military victory in the battle, a victory they cannot be allowed to win. Finally, 3 weeks ago, on Easter Wednesday, they mounted their massive invasion of South Vietnam. 3 North Vietnamese divisions swept across the demilitarized zone into South Vietnam in violation of the treaties they had signed in 1954 and in violation of the understanding they had reached with President Johnson in 1968 when he stopped the bombing in North Vietnam in return for arrangements which included their pledge not to violate. Shortly after the invasion across the DNC, another 3 North Vietnamese divisions invaded South Vietnam further south. As the offensive progressed, the enemy indiscriminately shelled civilian population centers in clear violation of the 1968 bombing order understanding. The facts are clear. More than 120,000 North Vietnamese are now fighting in South Vietnam. There are no South Vietnamese troops anywhere in North Vietnam. 12 of North Vietnam's 13 regular combat divisions have now left their own soil in order to carry aggressive war onto the territory of their neighbors. Whatever pretext there was of a civil war in South Vietnam has now been stripped away. What we are witnessing here, what is being brutally inflicted upon the people of South Vietnam, is a clear case of naked and unprovoked aggression across an international border. The only word for it is invasion. Has been resisted on the ground entirely by South Vietnamese forces. No United States ground troops have been involved. None will be involved. To support this defensive effort by the South Vietnamese, I have ordered attacks on enemy military targets in both North and South Vietnam by the air and naval forces of the United States. I have before me a report which I received this morning from General Edwards. He gives the following evaluation of the situation. South Vietnamese are fighting courageously and well in their self-defense. They are inflicting very heavy casualties on the invading force, which has not gained the easy victory some predicted 3 weeks ago. Our airstrikes have been essential in protecting our own remaining forces and in assisting the South Vietnamese in their efforts to protect their homes and their country from the United States. General Abrams predicts there will be several more weeks of very hard fighting in which some battles will be lost and others will be won for the South Vietnamese. But he is convinced that if we continue to provide air and sea support, the enemy will fail in its desperate gamble to impose a communist regime on South Vietnam, and the South Vietnamese will then have demonstrated their ability to defend themselves on the ground against future enemy attacks. Based on this realistic assessment, General Edwards, and after consultation with President Chu, Ambassador Bunker, Ambassador Porter, and my senior advisors in Washington, I have 3 decisions to announce tonight. First, I have decided that Vietnamization has proved itself sufficiently that we can continue our program of withdrawing American forces without jeopardizing our overall goal, of ensuring South Vietnam's survival as an independent country. Consequently, I'm announcing tonight that over the next 2 months, 20,000 more Americans will be brought home to Vietnam. This decision is a full approval of President Chu and General Edwards. It will bring our troop ceiling down to 49,000 by July 1, a reduction of half of Navy men since this administration came to office. Second, I have directed Ambassador Porter to return to the negotiating table in Paris tomorrow, but with one very specific purpose in mind. We are not resuming the Paris talks simply in order to hear more empty propaganda and bombast from the North Vietnamese and Vietcong governments, but to get on with the constructive business of making peace. We are resuming the Paris talks with the firm expectation of productive talks leading to rapid progress will follow through all available channels. As far as we are concerned, the first order of business will be to get the enemy to halt his invasion of South Vietnam and to return the American prisoners of war. Finally, I have ordered that our air and naval attacks on entered military installations in North Vietnam be continued until the North Vietnamese stop their offensive in South Vietnam. I have flatly rejected the proposal that we stop the bombing in North Vietnam as a condition for returning to the negotiating table. They sold that package to the United States once before in 1968. We're not going to buy it again in 1972. Now let's look at the record. By July 1, we will have drawn over 90% of our forces from Vietnam in 1969. Before the enemy's invasion began, we had cut our air sorties in half. We have offered exceedingly generous terms for peace. The only thing that we have refused to do is to accede to the enemy's demand to overthrow the lawfully constituted government of South Vietnam and to impose a communist dictatorship in its place. As you will recall, I have warned on a number of occasions over the past 3 years that if the enemy responded to our efforts to bring peace by stepping up the war, I would act to meet that attack for 3 reasons. To protect our remaining and our forces, to permit continuation of our withdrawal program, and to prevent the imposition of a communist regime on the people of South Vietnam against their will, with the inevitable bloodbath that would follow for hundreds of thousands who have dared to oppose communist aggression. The air and naval strikes of recent weeks have been carried out to meet those objectives. They have been directed only against military targets supporting the invasion of South Vietnam. They will not stop until that invasion stops. The communists have failed in their efforts to win over the people of South Vietnam politically. I don't believe that they will fail in their effort to conquer South Vietnam or Kevin. Their one remaining hope is to win in the Congress of the United States and among the people of the United States the victory they cannot win among the people of South Vietnam or on the battlefield of South Vietnam. Great question, and it's how we, the American people, will respond to this final challenge. Let us look at what the stakes are, not just for South Vietnam, but for the United States and the cause of peace in the world. If one country, armed with the most modern weapons by other countries, can invade, and succeed in conquering it, other countries will be encouraged to do exactly the same thing in the Mideast, in Europe, and other international danger zones. If the communists win militarily in Vietnam, the risk of war in other parts of the world would be enormously increased. We are not trying to conquer North Vietnam or any other country. We want no territory, we seek no vision. We have offered the most generous peace terms. Peace with honor for both sides, South Vietnam and North Vietnam, each respecting the other's independence. But we will not be defeated, and we will never surrender our dignity, and we will never surrender our friends to communist aggression. We have come a long way in this conflict. South Vietnamese have made great progress and are now bearing the brunt of the battle. We can now see the day when no more Americans will be involved there at all. But as we come to the end of this long, difficult struggle, we must be steadfast, we must not falter. For all that we have risked and all that we have gained over the years now hangs in the balance during the coming weeks and months. If we now let down our friends, we shall surely be letting down ourselves and our future as well. If we now persist, history will thank America for her courage and her vision at this testing time. Let us bring our men home from Vietnam. Let us end the war. Let us end it in such a way that the younger brothers and sons of the brave men who have fought Vietnam will have not to fight again in some other Vietnam at some time in the future. Any man who sits here in this office feels a solemn and heavy weight of obligation to future generations. Any man who sits here has the right to take any action which would advocate America's great tradition of world leadership. Earlier this year, I traveled to Peking on a historic journey. Next month, I shall travel to Moscow, but I hope will also be a journey. The 18 countries I have visited as president, I have found great respect for the office of president of the United States. I have reason to expect, based on Dr. Kissinger's report, that I shall apply that same respect for the presidency when I visit Moscow. I do not know who will be in this office in the years ahead, but I do know future presidents will travel the nations abroad and turn us to peace and life. If the United States betrays the millions of people who have relied on us in Vietnam, the President of the United States, whoever he is, will not deserve nor receive the respect which which is essential if the United States is to play the great role we are destined to play of helping to build a new structure of peace in the world. It would amount to a renunciation of our morality, an abdication of our leadership among nations, and an invitation for the mighty to prey upon the weak all around the world. It would be to deny peace the chance peace deserves to have. This we shall never do. Let us then unite as a nation in a firm and wise policy of peace. Not the peace of surrender, but peace with honor. Not only peace in our time, but peace for generations. During the past 3 weeks, you've been reading and hearing about the massive invasion of South Vietnam by the communist forces of North Vietnam. Tonight, I want to give you a first-hand report on the military situation in Vietnam, the decisions I have made with regard to the role of the United States in the conflict, and the efforts we are making to bring peace to the negotiating table. Let me begin by briefly reviewing what the situation was when I took office, what we have done since then to end American involvement in the war and to bring peace to the long-suffering Southeast Asia. In January 2019-69, the American troops killed in Vietnam was 549,000. Our casualties were running as high as 300 a week. 30,000 young Americans were being drafted every month. Today, 39 months later, through our program of Vietnamization, helping the South Vietnamese develop the capability to defend themselves, the number of Americans in Vietnam by Monday, May 1st, will have been reduced to 69,000. Our casualties, even during the present all-out enemy offensive, have been reduced by 95%. Draft calls now average fewer than 5,000 minimum, and we expect to bring them to zero next year. As I reported in my television address to the nation on January 25, we have offered the most generous peace terms in both public and private negotiating sessions. Our most recent proposal provided for an immediate ceasefire, the exchange of all prisoners of war, the withdrawal of all of our forces within 6 months. Hello. Yeah. Yeah. How'd you get along with Jerry? Well, Dickie Rogers knows we're going to see him Monday, too. Yeah. He's doing it for him because he just... Yeah. Maybe the problem is... So forth. Something else that is kind of better. I thought he wanted to put them in earlier. Yeah. What do you mean, leave them out? And then he'd make them in. Oh. Oh, yeah, well, the Navy ammonia agreement? Oh, no.
Sure.
Yeah. But, well, the point is, if we can get submarines, I thought that that's what we all agreed to. Okay. Yeah, that's right. We just talked, I'd scare him with the Joint Chiefs a little. Yeah. But it's getting it pretty predictable, though, Henry. Yeah. Right. He just doesn't want us to get it better than us, does he? Russians don't want you to want us to put it out, don't they? No. decided yet, so that's done. Okay. All right. This offer was refusal even to discuss our proposal, and at the same time, a massive escalation of their military activities in the battlefield. Last October. Last October. Same month when we made this peace offer to Hanoi in secret, our intelligence reports began to indicate that the enemy was building up for a major attack. Yet we deliberately refrained from responding militarily. Instead, we patiently continued with the Paris talks, hoping, because we wanted to give the enemy every chance to reach a negotiated settlement with the bargaining people rather than to seek a military victory in the battlefield, a victory they cannot be allowed to win. Finally, 3 weeks ago, an Easter weekend, they mounted their invasion of South Vietnam. 3 North Vietnamese divisions swept across the demilitarized zone in South Vietnam. Vietnam. 3 South Vietnam nations swept across the demilitarized zone into South Vietnam. In violation of the treaties they had signed in 1954, and in violation of the understanding they had reached with President Johnson in 1968, when he stopped the bombing in North Vietnam in return for arrangements which included their pledge not to violate the demilitarized zone. Shortly after the invasion across the DMZ, another 3 North Vietnamese divisions invaded South Vietnam further south. As the South offensive progressed, the enemy indiscriminately shelled civilian population centers in clear violation of the 1968 bombing all of understanding. The facts are clear. More than 120,000 North Vietnamese are now fighting in South Vietnam. There are no South Vietnamese anywhere in North Vietnam. 12 South North Vietnam, South 13 regular combat divisions have now left their own soil in order to carry aggressive war onto the territory of their neighbors. Whatever pretext there was of civil war in South Vietnam has now been stripped away. What we are witnessing here, and what is being brutally inflicted upon the people of South Vietnam, naked unprovoked aggression across international borders. The only word for it is invasion. This massive attack, resisted on the ground entirely by South Vietnamese forces. No United States ground troops have been involved. None will be involved. To support this defensive effort of the South Vietnamese, I have ordered attacks on enemy military targets in both North and South Vietnam by the air and naval forces of the United States. I have before me a report which I received this morning from General Edwards. He gives the following evaluation of the situation. South Vietnamese are fighting courageously and well in their self-defense. They are inflicting very heavy casualties on the invading force, which has not gained the easy victory which some predicted for it 3 weeks ago. Our airstrikes have been essential in protecting our own remaining forces and in assisting the South Vietnamese in their efforts to protect their country from a communist state. General Abrams predicts that there will be several more weeks of very hard fighting in which some battles will be lost and others will be won by the South Vietnamese. But he is convinced that if we continue to provide air and sea support, the enemy will fail in his desperate gamble to oppose a communist regime in South Vietnam. And the South Vietnamese will then have demonstrated their ability to defend themselves on the ground against future enemy attacks. Based on this realistic assessment from General Abrams, and in consultation with President Chu, Ambassador Bunker, Ambassador Porter, and our senior advisors in Washington, I have 3 decisions to announce tonight. First, I decided that Vietnam position has proved itself sufficiently that we can continue our program of withdrawing American forces without detriment to our overall goal of ensuring South Vietnam's survival as an independent country. Consequently, I am announcing tonight that over the next 2 months, 20,000 more Americans will be brought home from Vietnam. This decision has the full approval of President Chu and General Abrams. It will bring our troop ceiling down to 49,000 on July 1, a reduction of 500,000 men. Office. Second, I have directed Ambassador Porter to return to the negotiating table with Howard tomorrow but with one very specific purpose in mind. We are not resuming the Paris talks simply in order to hear more empty propaganda and bombast from the North Vietnamese and Vietnam governments, but to get on with the constructive business of it. We are not resuming the Paris talks simply in order to hear more empty propaganda and bombast from the North Vietnamese and Vietnam governments, but to get on with the constructive business of doing. We are resuming the Paris talks with the firm expectation that productive talks leading to rapid progress will follow through all available channels. As far as we are concerned, the first order of business will be to get the enemy to halt its invasion of South Vietnam and to return the American prisoners of war. Finally, I have ordered that our air and naval attacks on military installations in North Vietnam be continued until the North Vietnamese stop their offensive in South Vietnam. I have flatly rejected the proposal that we stop the bombing of North Vietnam as a condition for returning to the bargaining table. They sold that package to the United States once before in 1968, and we are not going to buy it again in 1972. Now let us look at the record. On July 1, we will have drawn over 90% of our forces from Vietnam in 1969. Before the enemy's invasion began, we had cut our air sorties in half. We have offered exceedingly generous terms for peace. The only thing we have refused to do is to accede to the enemy's demand to overthrow the lawfully constituted government of South Vietnam and to impose a communist dictatorship in its place. If you will recall, I have warned on a number of occasions over the past 3 years that if the enemy responded to our efforts to bring peace by stepping up the war, I would act to meet that attack for 3 reasons. To protect our remaining American forces, to permit continuation of our withdrawal program, and to prevent the imposition of a communist regime on the people of South Vietnam against their will, with the inevitable bloodbath that would follow for hundreds of thousands who have dared to oppose communist aggression. The air and naval strikes of recent weeks have been carried out to achieve those objectives. They have been directed only against military targets supporting the invasion of South Vietnam, and they will not stop until that invasion stops. Communists have failed in their efforts to win over the people of South Vietnam politically. General Abrams believes they will fail in their efforts to conquer South Vietnam militarily. Their one remaining hope is to win in the Congress of the United States and among the people of the United States the victory they cannot win among the people of South Vietnam and on the battlefield of South Vietnam. The great question then is how we, the American people, will respond to this final challenge. Let us look at what the stakes are, not just for South Vietnam, but for the United States and the cause of peace in the world. If one country, armed with the most modern weapons by major powers, can invade another nation and succeed in conquering it, other countries will be encouraged to do exactly the same thing. Will be encouraged to do exactly the same thing in the meetings in Europe and other international control zones. If the communists win militarily in Vietnam, the risk of war in other parts of the world will be exhausted. We are not trying to conquer North Vietnam or any other country. We want no territory. We seek no basis. We have offered the most generous peace terms, peace with honor for both sides, South Vietnam and North Vietnam, each respecting the others in the land. But we will not be defeated. We will never surrender our friends, the communist aggression. We have come a long way in this conflict. South Vietnamese have made great progress and are now bearing the brunt of the battle. We can now see the day when no American will be involved there at all. But as we come to the end of this long and difficult struggle, we must be steadfast and we must not falter. From all that we have risked and all that we have gained over the years now hangs in the balance during the coming weeks and months. If we let down our friends, we shall surely be letting down ourselves and our future as well. If we now resist, future generations will thank America for her courage and her vision at this testing time. That is why I say, let us bring our men home from Vietnam. Let us end the war in Vietnam. But let us end it in such a way that the younger brothers and sons of the brave men who have fought in Vietnam will not have to fight again in some other Vietnam at some time in the future. Any man who sits here in his office feels a solemn and heavy weight of obligation to future generations. No man who sits here has the right take any action which would advocate America's great tradition of revolution. Earlier this year, I traveled to Pekin and started Journey for Peace. Next month, I shall travel to Moscow on what I hope will also be a Journey for Peace. The 18 countries that I visit as president, I have found great respect for the office of president of the United States. I reasonably expect, based on Dr. Kissinger's report, I shall find that same respect for the presidency, which I have when I visit Moscow. I do not know who will be in this office in the years ahead, but I do know that future presidents will travel the nations abroad on journeys for peace, as I have. If the United States betrays millions of people who rely on us in Vietnam, the president of the United States, whoever he is, will not deserve nor receive the respect which is essential if the United States is to play the great role we are destined to play in helping to build a new structure of peace in the world. It would amount to a renunciation of our morality, an abdication of our leadership among nations, and an invitation for the mighty to prey upon the weak all around the world. It would be to deny peace the chance peace deserves to have. This we must never do. My fellow Americans, let us unite as a nation in a firm and wise policy of peace. Not the peace of surrender, but peace with honor. Not only peace in our time, but peace for generations.
I had a call, Dr. Kissinger, would you cancel that? It's not necessary. I'll see you later.
Good evening. During the past 3 weeks, you have been reading and hearing about the massive invasion of South Vietnam by the Communist armies of North Vietnam. Tonight, I want to give you a first-hand report on the military situation in Vietnam, the decisions I have made with regard to the role of the United States in the conflict, and the efforts we are making to bring peace to the negotiating table. Let me begin by briefly reviewing what the situation was when I took office, what we have done since then to end American involvement in the war, and to bring peace to the long-suffering people of Southeast Asia. On January 20, 1969, the American troops ceiling in Vietnam was 549,000. Our casualties were running as high as 300 a week. 30,000 young Americans were being drafted every month. Today, 39 months later, through our program of Vietnamization, helping the South Vietnamese develop the capability of defending themselves, the number of Americans in Vietnam by Monday, May 1st, will have been reduced to 69,000. Our casualties, even during the threat of all enemy offensive, have been reduced by 95%. Draft calls now average fewer than 5,000 a month, and we expect to bring them to zero next year. As I reported in my television address to the nation on January 25, we have offered the most generous peace terms both public and private negotiating sessions. Our most recent proposal provided for an immediate ceasefire, the exchange of all prisoners of war, the withdrawal of all of our forces within 6 months, and new elections in Vietnam, which would be internationally supervised with all political elements, including the communists, participating in and helping to run the elections. 1 month before such elections, President Hu and Vice President Wong would resign. Hanoi's answer to this offer was a refusal even to discuss our proposals, and at the same time, a huge escalation of their military activities on the battlefield. Last October, the same month when we made this peace offer to Hanoi and Zeke, our intelligence reports began to indicate that the enemy was building up for a major attack. Yet we deliberately refrained from responding militarily. Instead, we patiently continued with the Paris talks, because we wanted to give the enemy every chance to reach an negotiated settlement bargaining table, rather than to seek a military victory on the battlefield of a free retreat, which they cannot be allowed to win. Rather than seek a military victory on the battlefield of a victory, they cannot be allowed to win. Finally, 3 weeks ago, on Easter weekend, they mounted their massive invasion of South Vietnam. Three North Vietnamese divisions swept across the demilitarized zone into South Vietnam in violation of the treaties they had signed in 1954, and in violation of the understanding they had reached with President Johnson in 1968, when he stopped the bombing in North Vietnam in return for arrangements which included their pledge not to violate the demilitarized zone. Shortly after the invasion across the DMZ, another three North Vietnamese divisions invaded South Vietnam further south. As the offensive progressed, the enemy indiscriminately shelled civilian population centers in clear violation of the 1968 bombing halt understanding. Facts are clear. More than 120,000 North Vietnamese are now fighting in South Vietnam. There are no South Vietnamese fighting any place in North Vietnam. 12 of North Vietnam's 13 regular combat divisions have now left their own soil in order to carry aggressive war into the territory of their neighbors. Whatever pretext there was of a civil war in South Vietnam has now been stripped away. What we are witnessing here, what is being brutally inflicted upon the people of South Vietnam, is a clear case of naked and unprovoked aggression across an international border. There is only one word for it, invasion. This attack has been resisted on the ground entirely by South Vietnamese forces. No United States ground troops have been involved. None will be involved. To support this defensive effort of the South Vietnamese, I ordered attacks on enemy military targets in both North and South Vietnam by the air and naval forces of I have before me a report which I received, I have on my desk. I have here on my desk a report. I received this report this morning from General Abrams. He gives the following evaluation of the situation. The South Vietnamese are fighting courageously and well in their self-defense. They are inflicting very heavy casualties on the invading force, which has not gained the easy victory some predicted for it 3 years ago. Our airstrikes have been essential in protecting our own remaining forces. and assisting the Southwick needs in their efforts to protect their homes and their country from a common state. Now, Abrams predicts that there will be several more weeks of very hard fighting, in which some battles will be lost and some will be won by the Southwick needs. But he is convinced that if we continue to provide air and sea support, the enemy will fail in its desperate gamble to impose a communist regime on South Vietnam, and that the South Vietnamese will then have demonstrated their ability to defend themselves on the ground against future enemy attacks. Based on this realistic assessment, General Abrams, and after consultation with President Chu, Ambassador Bunker, Ambassador Porter, my senior advisors in Washington, I have three decisions to announce tonight. First, I have decided that Vietnamization has proved itself sufficiently that we can continue our program of withdrawing American forces without detriment to our overall goal of ensuring South Vietnam's survival of an independent country. Consequently, I am announcing tonight that over the next 2 months, 20,000 more Americans will be brought home from Vietnam. This decision is the full approval of President Q and General Abrams. It will bring our troop ceiling down to 49,000 by July 1st, a reduction of 500,000 men. This is since the time that the Citizens Administration came to office. Second, I directed Ambassador Porter to return to the negotiating table in Paris tomorrow, but with one very specific purpose in mind. We are not resuming the Paris talks simply in order to hear more empty propaganda and bombast from the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong governments, but to get on with the constructive business of making peace. We are resuming the Paris talks with a firm expectation that productive talks leading to rapid progress will follow through all available channels. As far as we are concerned, the first order of business will be to get the enemy to halt his invasion of South Vietnam and to return the American prisoners of war. Finally, I ordered that our air and naval attacks on military installations in North Vietnam be continued until the North Vietnamese stop their offensive in South Vietnam. I have flatly rejected the proposal that we stop the bombing of North Vietnam as a condition for returning to the negotiating table. They sold that package to the United States once before in 1968, and we're not going to buy it again in 1972. Now let us look at the record. On July 1, we will have drawn over 90% of our forces from Vietnam in 1969. Before the enemy's invasion began, we had cut our air sorties in half. We have offered exceedingly generous peace terms. The only thing that we have refused to do is to accede to the enemy's demand to overthrow the lawfully constituted government of South Vietnam and to impose a communist dictatorship in its place. As you will recall, I have warned on a number of occasions in the past 3 years that if the enemy responded to our efforts to bring peace by stepping up the war, I would act to meet that attack for three reasons: to protect our remaining American forces, to prevent continuation of our withdrawal, and to prevent the imposition of a communist regime on the people of South Vietnam against their will, with the inevitable bloodbath that would follow for hundreds of thousands who have dared to oppose communist aggression. The air and naval strikes of recent weeks have been carried out to achieve these objectives. They have been directed only against military targets who support the invasion of South Vietnam, and they will not stop until that invasion stops. The communists have failed in their efforts to win over the people of South Vietnam politically. General Abrams believes that they will fail in their efforts to conquer South Vietnam militarily. Their one remaining hope is to win in the Congress of the United States and among the people of the United States the victory they cannot win among the people of South Vietnam and on the battlefield of South Vietnam. The great question then is how we, American people, will respond to that challenge. Let us look at what this faces, not just for South Vietnam, but for the United States and the cause of peace and war. If one country, armed with the most modern weapons by the major powers, can invade another nation and succeed in conquering it, other countries will be encouraged to do exactly the same thing in the Middle East, in Europe, and in other international dangerous lands. If, on the other hand, communist aggression fails in Vietnam, it will be discouraged elsewhere, and the chances for peace will be increased. If the communists win militarily in Vietnam, the risk of war in other parts of the world would be enormously increased. If, on the other hand, communist aggression fails in Vietnam, it will be discouraged elsewhere, and the chances for peace will be increased. Vietnam or North Vietnam or any other country. We want no territory. We seek no basins. We have offered the most generous peace terms, peace with honor for both sides. The South Vietnam and North Vietnam each respecting the other's independence. But we will not be defeated, and we will never surrender our friends to communist aggression. We have come a long way in this conflict. The South Vietnamese have made great progress in our bringing the drought barrier in front of the battle. We can now see the day when no more Americans will be involved there at all. But as we come to the end of this long and difficult struggle, we must be steadfast and we must not falter. All that we have risked and all that we have gained over the years now hangs in the balance during the coming weeks and months. If we now let down our friends, we shall surely be letting down ourselves and our future as well. If we now resist, future generations will thank America for her courage and wisdom, for her courage and her vision at this day. If we now resist, future generations will thank America for her courage and her vision at this time of testimony. That is why I say, let us bring our men home from Vietnam. Let us end the war in Vietnam. And let us end it in such a way that the younger brothers and sons of the brave men who have fought in Vietnam do not have to fight in some other Vietnam at some time in the future. Any man who sits here in this office feels a profound sense of obligation to future generations. No man who sits here has the right to take any action which would advocate America's great tradition of world leadership. Earlier this year, I traveled to Peking on a historic journey for peace. Next month, I shall travel to Moscow, but I hope will also be a journey for peace. In the 18 countries I have visited as President of the United States, I have found great respect for the office of President of the United States. I have reason to expect, based on Dr. Kissinger's report, that I shall find that same respect for the office I hold when I visit Moscow. I do not know who will be in this office in years ahead, but I do know that future presidents will travel the nations abroad on journeys for peace as I have. If the United States betrays the millions of people who have relied on us in Vietnam, the President of the United States, whoever he is, will not deserve nor receive the respect which is essential if the United States is to play the great role we are destined to play in helping to build a new structure of peace. It would amount to a renunciation of our morale, an abdication of our leadership among nations, and an invitation for the mighty to prey upon the weak all around the world. It would be to deny peace the chance peace deserves to have. This we shall never do. My fellow Americans, let us therefore unite as a nation. Let us therefore unite as a nation in a firm and wise policy. Not the peace of surrender, but the peace of honor. Not only peace in our time, but peace for generations to come. Yeah. Oh, hello. Hello. Oh, Henry, I didn't have... No, I told it was not necessary. I'll see you in the plane. I had an idea about Smith, but we didn't have to say that. I think we should say more. Oh, I know, but I have an idea. Sure, I understand. But you go ahead with your briefing. You've got more important things in mind. You get along right with staff? Fine. Now you're going on to, you're doing the, good luck. Good luck.